everyone. I'm Gail. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Gail.
It's good to be sober today. It's really good to be here with you. I'm going to tell you a little bit about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I want to welcome the newcomers. I want to let you know that if this wasn't the best thing that ever happened to me, I wouldn't be here today talking to you. I'm really grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was on a run when I got here, and there was a series of unfortunate events that led me to the doorstep of Alcoholics Anonymous. My sobriety date is February 20th, 1990, and that wasn't my first time trying to get here. My first sobriety date, I was still doing the marijuana maintenance, and sitting in the rooms and not looking for the similarities, looking at all the differences, and I just needed to get my shit together enough so that I could move on. I thought Alcoholics Anonymous was a graduate program, that at some point someone was going to say, you know what, you're okay now, you can go about your business, and that's not what happened. I grew up in an alcoholic home. It was an everyday part of my life from the time I can remember. My mother and my father both were alcoholics, both young, having children. I'm the oldest of five, and I'm the oldest of five. I became the caretaker. In other words, I was an Al-Anon way before I was an alcoholic because I was taking care of my alcoholic parents. I was helping people tie off in my bathroom at the age of 13. Watching mom and dad do what they did, and I had a pretty rough upbringing. I'm going to go back just a little bit further. Growing up, my dad and my mom, both teenagers, she was 16, he was 19, and it was 1969, and my mom got pregnant with me, and it was like a shotgun wedding, let's put it that way. And pretty much, they didn't have the support of their parents, so it was a real struggle for them, and they turned to what I guess any alcoholics would, you know, growing up in their alcoholic homes as well. I didn't know this, but my grandfather, too, died from alcoholism. So, you know, it was tough for them, and so being the black sheep of their family, my mom and my dad ended up hooking up with the Rainbow family. And so we traveled all about the U.S. Planting trees and living in campgrounds and teepees and tents. And it was community and unity, and it was peace and love in the 60s. And my dad tried to get into Woodstock, and he was so loaded he didn't make it in the doors. But I guess that was the way it was. Woodstock was, you know. I was about a month old when that happened, and he wanted to take me, but my mom insisted no. But we did a lot of traveling in buses with people like Further and Rainbow and Chicken and Bear and Bright Sun and Starflower, and I mean all of those names. So I was a hippie kid. We grew up in all these different little places. We landed in a place in New Mexico. It was right near a place called the Hog Farm. And I guess it was one of the longest running hippie communes. And we ended up following a group of people to a place in Bisbee, Arizona. Bisbee, Arizona, if you ever go there, it's an old copper mining town, and there's not much for kids to do there, but if you want to know where all the hippies went and artists are, that's where you go, Bisbee, Arizona. There is, like I said, just a couple bars and not a lot for kids to do. And my mom's alcoholism really took off then, and my brother, being the oldest of five, I had a sibling that was a year younger than me. And, you know, we just did what kids do. We started, you know, learning new words and, you know, toeing the line with mom, and her addiction was taking her in another direction. And, you know, my dad had his partners and my mom had her partners, and And it was really tough with like five adults telling you what to do and, you know, trying to get up and go to school and things like that, trying to hold a lot together. And I met the man of my dreams. I was about 18 years old. I was straight out of high school, decided I was going to drop out. And he rode a motorcycle, carried a gun, and he had a complex. And he was the man of my dreams. I say that because we drank the same. He lived with his grandparents. He didn't have a job. And when he turned 21, he made me his wife. And it was definitely not a match made in heaven. It was insanity. It was total insanity. I was 18 years old, and if he had six beers, I had to have seven. If he took three pills, I'd have to take four. I mean, it was just a lot of chaotic behavior, and I'm surprised I came out of that with my life, actually. I did not know how to do things gracefully. I had a lot of confusing ideas about what love was. And, you know, I did things that, yeah, I'm not proud of. That hopeless demoralization? Absolutely. I lost my timer. So just tell me, okay? So at 18, I'm married. I'm with this guy. It lasts about 3 months. I have a lot of different partners. I change partners quite often. And like I said, I was in search of love. And I just didn't know what to do. At the age of 19, my mom was moving out here to California. And I wanted to protect my brothers and sisters from all these people out here in California somehow, some way. And I came out to California, and I was introduced to something that just escalated my bottom. It really helped me reach bottom a lot quicker. I came crawling into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous at 20 years old, and 6 months later, I was wondering, when I turned 21, I thought you guys were going to give me a degree. You know, like, hey, you are now graduated, and you can move on. But that didn't happen. My very last drunk, I remember I was with a lady and her brother, and we were in Lancaster, California, and if that's not that, everybody can hit bottom in Lancaster. It's not that hard, okay? I'm telling you, literally, you don't just like move to Lancaster. You freaking end up there. And it's a vortex. It'll suck you in bad, too. But, you know, I'll talk a little bit about my last drunk, and then I'll talk about how I got sober. My very last, I had been coming in and out of these rooms for about 90 days. I was coming up on 90 days, but I was still doing marijuana maintenance. And I ran into some old friends because I was trying to be self-supporting for the first time in my life. I was doing my GR searches at the local liquor stores there, all about Lancaster. And I ran into some old friends, and they hadn't seen me in about 60 days. You know, I'd been off the radar. And I end up going to this party, and I held out for a little bit because I heard what was going on in these rooms. And I was like, well, drinking's my problem, so, you know, anything else is up. And the next thing you know, I was just, I call it my kamikaze trip. And I'm drunk dialing people from the corner pay phone, because before, you know, it was before cell phones. I'm drunk dialing people collect. And you know, threatening to jump into front of cars. And I had pretty much burned every bridge with my family at that point. And I don't know. I call it my kamikaze trip because that's what I did. It was literally a kamikaze trip. I don't know. There was something about these rooms when I was coming in here. My dad actually had gotten clean and sober, and he he had, I think he had about a year or two. And I saw him with a bicycle, and he was coming to these meetings, and he was, you know, having conversations with me and stuff. And it was just brand new behavior for me to see my dad. He was like, he turned into the town drunk in Arizona, and followed us out here. But he did get sober, and he got clean and sober, and he got a job, and he was doing this thing called Alcoholics Anonymous, and it really blew me away that he was actually, like, really striving to be a better man. And I saw what AA did to him, and when he actually offered me a place to stay, and I had my kamikaze trip, I thought I lost all chances. Where I was living was a dope house out in the middle of nowhere, and I was recycling everything at the neighbor's house that I possibly could, and that behavior was leading me down a really rough road. And when my dad came and actually offered me a place to stay, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and what you guys did was you guys saved my life. There was a genuine concern. People reached out their hand. People extended love, grace. There was something about the hope that you guys talked about in these rooms that kept me coming back. And I really wanted what you had. So I was grateful that I got that opportunity to hear the message of hope, that I was ill enough to hear it. And so anyhow, I met this lady that, it was the Arid Club. They used to go to the Arid Club all the time. And at the Arid Club, there was a lady that worked behind the counter. Her name was Jackie. And I'm sure I'd seen her many, many times just coming in to the meetings and stuff. But that day, after my kamikaze trip, I asked her to be my sponsor. I thought I had lost my place to live. My dad came and picked me up from where I was and took me there. And ended up just really laying it on the line with her. You know, I think that was key, was absolutely letting somebody in and letting them know what was going on with me so that I could get the help. And being vulnerable like that was definitely not my strong suit, but my life depended on it that day. And Jackie saved my life by saying yes. And she started to take me through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's pretty amazing. It's hard to sum up in about 20 minutes or 18 minutes what's happened since then, but I'll try. And so I took a year cake at a meeting in Palmdale, a big, big speaker meeting there, and I met this man at the end of the table there, and you know, we were both really young. I was a young people at one time, actually. and we met on AA campus, and it's kind of been history ever since. We've been married a long time, 30 plus years. I'm not a math elite, he'll tell you. but we really have, we have been graced by so many great relationships in Alcoholics Anonymous. We have friendships, and it's a network of people that really love and have concern for you. And I'm just really, really grateful that we met that day, that fateful day, and it's been a whirlwind. Let's see, what happens now? Well, I got a little bit of a job, which was really great. I felt like I won the lotto because I never really had a legitimate job and was self-supporting. And I was a cleaning maid at a local hotel, and I'm going to meetings, and I'm living in my dad's closet because I had to. There wasn't a whole lot of safe places for me to be. And I met this lady at this meeting, and she was looking for a roommate, and we became really, really good friends. Yeah, that's what happens here. You know, you find people that are on the same path and that are looking for the same thing, and you bond with them like you just, like never before. You know, you're averting death together. And so we started living together, and there was an opening for another job. And I mean, for the first time in my life, I was being self-supporting. There was something that happens when you come in here, you know, your self-esteem is restored, you know, hope is restored. And I was rising, you know, I was a couple years sober. And I get married to Bill Matthews, and we actually try to have kids a couple times, and having a lot of different difficulties, and I thought I did too much damage to my body when I was out there, and after about six times, we actually have a son now. And thank God, he's never seen me loaded or drunk, but he actually, you know, he's heard a lot about Alcoholics Anonymous. He says things to me, he repeats it back, like one day at a time, things like that, just for today, keep it simple, you know, easy does it, stuff like that. So that's really great. And when I met Bill, he had an eight-year-old daughter, and I got to be a mom, like, instantly. Today I can say, you know, I'm pretty fortunate. I get to be called mom today. You know, if you're a mom or a dad, you know, I hope that you're a sober mom or dad. You know, those kids deserve it. You know, I got dragged through a lot of shit. And when you use and you drink, you do that with your kids, and it's unfortunate for them, and it can be detrimental, you know. So what it's like now, actually, 3 minutes. What it's like now, in this last week, I got to celebrate great friends' birthdays. We show up for each other in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was thinking when I was sitting up here just a few minutes ago, it was like, I used to be a member of the Hustlers, Hoes, and Hiders Club. And I, you know, and it wasn't anonymous. And if you had it or I had it, we shared it. You know what? It was taking my life away from me. And here I get up here and talk about recovery and hope and the grace you guys extended to me. I didn't crawl out from underneath a rock today. I have great friends that we get to celebrate life together. You know, life is lifey. It gets hard. I'm really, really, really grateful that we get to do this thing together. We don't do it alone, no matter what. I want to stay sober. This Alcoholics Anonymous has given me every single thing great in my life. And I'm just really, really grateful that I got to be here. And I'm going to go ahead and wrap it up. I appreciate you guys taking the time to listen tonight and or today. And God bless you all. Huh?
All right. Our second speaker is Bill Matthews.
My name's Bill, and I am a recovered alcoholic, and though that might shock some people, well, first of all, is this being recorded? Man, I want to thank all 500 people for being here today, especially you way in the back standing. I really appreciate your time. When I say recovered, a lot of people get a little bit shocked. Doesn't mean I'm not an alcoholic. It means I've recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, because that's what the book tells me I get to do. I get to recover. Welcome to the new guys with 30 days. You too, on the same program that was available to me, is also available to you. I am still an alcoholic, but what I've recovered from is a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. I do not suffer from alcoholism anymore because I don't drink. And how did I do that? What we do in alcoholism... Not drinking is not what we do in AA. Not drinking is what is the result of what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. What do we do in Alcoholics Anonymous? We try to enlarge our spiritual life, right? You guys all clean up really well, man. I thought I was going to be in here talking to a bunch of young people. Not that you guys aren't all young. My sobriety date is May 20th, 1988. And I got sober when I was 21 years old. My wife here was 20 years old. And that's why we were invited here. Because you can get sober when you're young. I would really want to, you know, compliment my lovely wife for having the nerve and the ability to get up and stand up. And this is not what she likes to do. But I asked her, would you like to? And you know what? What do we do in Alcoholics Anonymous? If you have fear today, walk towards that fear. You know what eliminates fear? Action. And she took the action. And I really want to say thanks, babe, because I know that she was really, really nervous. So what do we do in Alcoholics Anonymous? You know, we discover, uncover, and discard the things that have been blocking us, the stories that we told ourselves of why we can't, why we shouldn't, I'm not good enough, I'll never measure up. You know what's great? I don't know what kind of shoes any of you guys wear. And the reason I say that is because I'm not looking down. For years, I had my head down. I didn't measure up. You know what's cool in Alcoholics Anonymous? I measure up. I'm not better than, I'm not worse than. Man, I am right here. We are all just right here. I might have a heck of a lot of days sober, but I'm still one drink away. What do I have? I have a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. What does that mean? It means I got to do some shit every day. You know, I don't get to stay sober tomorrow banked on what I did last week. I got up this morning like I do every morning, and I do some prayer and meditation. It does say upon awakening. It doesn't say upon your way to work, upon your lunch break, when shit gets really tough, talk to God. It says upon awakening. We ask God for direction. And I do a few simple readings and some writing and actually some meditation, which means I try to sit and quiet my freaking monkey ass mind, man. Because it is running. It is up before I am. I'm like, it's like, hey, Bill, time to get up. We got shit to worry about. And you know what's really interesting? The majority of the shit I worry about never happens. In fact, some of the worst things that have ever happened in my life never happened. Only right here. I've paid the price of shit that I anticipated to happen. How about if we turn that around? What if the good shit happens? What if all the things you want to happen actually happen? What if you get the job? What if the interview goes better than ever? What if she says yes to the date, or he says yes, or whatever the case might be? Can you imagine the energy that you're going to bring to a room thinking, this is going to freaking go amazing, versus, oh my God, this never works out for me. Man, it's always raining when I'm around. Just think of the energy. There's a reason why you say, man, he's so energetic. Man, he sure is so positive. He lights up the room, whatever it might be. That's true. What energy are we bringing? I can get way off track of all that shit. What I can tell you is this. Imagine this. It's 1976. Some of you will remember that. Maybe a little Motown playing. Things are good. I'm 11. I got friends. I go to school. Things are okay. So what does that mean? So what's the next great thing to do? Maybe I should drink a can of beer. Somebody handed me a tall can of Schlitz malt liquor. It had a blue bull on it. It was warm. I drank it. I had like the worst time of my life. I mean, I got so sick and all that stuff, the room spinning. But you know what was interesting? Definitely wanted to do it again. That same year, I went ice skating. We used to go ice skating. No, it wasn't figure skating. We were hockey skating, right? May Company. It was like Laurel Canyon and Oxnard. Anyway, the May Company. And my brother said, here, take this. It was a little piece of paper. It was so tiny. He's like, yeah, take this. I'm 11. Well, how bad can that hurt? I took it. The next 10 years of my life were literally a trip. Literally. Separated myself from family and friends. No more school. Got arrested. I mean, I even tried crack cocaine one time for 2 years. You might as well put everything you own in a big pile and light it on fire, because you're losing everything. I had a kid when I was 18 years old. The mother of my kid was 19. I turned 18 in October. My daughter was born in December. I had been kicked out of school. I got kicked out of school for selling weed to an undercover police officer. He did not look like a cop, trust me. But clearly I wasn't a good drug dealer. They came knocking at my door. I opened the door. Of course it's a school day. I'm 16. I open the door. It's the cops. I'm like, what are you doing here? He said, you're under arrest for sales of marijuana. I was like, how could that? I've been home all day. And they're like, no, come with me. I look out in the car. There's Rick. There's Vint. I'm like, holy shit. So their great idea, your punishment is, we're kicking you out of the whole LA school system. That is not punishment. I've been waiting for that. I've been hoping for that. That's what a 16-year-old kid that don't want to go to school hopes for. Cool. Now mom and dad don't have to say, Billy, get up. It's time for school. Come on. You're going to, you know, none of that shit. What they should have said is you're going to wear a pink jumpsuit to school every day and pick up trash at lunchtime. That's punishment. So now what do? Man, it is on. It is on. I've let go of all my great friends. I'm hanging out with much older people. Can you imagine, you know, a 17-year-old kid. I'm hanging out with guys that we're getting drunk. We drank good wine like Boone's Farm, Tickle Pink, Mad Dog, all that shit. Meisterbrow, Lucky Lager, the top shelf shit, you know. Vodka that just says vodka. I had a group of friends that we used to steal alcohol from our parents. You know, they'd lock it up in that little, the cheapest lock cabinet, home bar. But I realized if you take the hinge pin, the pins out of the hinges on the other side, you just open the door the other way. And what ended up happening is we took all the alcohol out, add a bunch of water, you know, you all know, put it back. And by the time mom and dad got home to drink the home shit, they were so toasted, they didn't even realize. We would steal as much as we could during the week, and we would meet in the field, and we would pour it all into one bottle. That's a classy way to drink, right? That's social drinking. So we would put it all in one jug, shake it up, and pass it around. And what I learned is if you plug your nose and hold it plugged long enough, you could drink anything. So here I am. That kid, I mean, we would just terrorize the neighborhood. You know, my father was born in 1928. And I know there's some older people here that can understand. My father, he forged his birth certificate to go into World War II. That was the kind of man my dad was. That's some good qualities. My dad never missed a day's work. 35 years he worked for the same company. He would get up every day and go to work. I know he drank at lunch break, so that might have had something to do with why he wanted to go to work and get away from my mom. I don't know. I knew my dad. The only way I knew my dad loved me is he let me live in his house. If you can relate to that. There was no love you, son. How you been? Where you been? How's school going? Dad went to work, came home, TV tray, beer, mom served him dinner, and I changed the channel when he asked. Because there was no remote back in the days. It's like, I was the remote. He'd be like, turn the channel. Lots of oddities there. Parents were bar owners. Put it this way, there's a story. Little Billy, you know, he's at school and he's with the other kids, and they're like, "Hey, this weekend, go home and come back to school with a story that has a moral to it." So Sally and all of them, they go home, and so they come Monday morning. The teacher says, "Does anybody have a story that has a moral to it?" And Sally's like, "It's me. Oh, it's my job to collect the eggs." On the farm, and this morning I collected all the eggs, and when I was running to go show my dad, I spilled the basket and broke the eggs. My dad said, "See, don't put all your eggs in one basket." They're like, "Oh, Sally, that's great. The other guy says, "Oh, it's me. I collect all the milk on the farm, and I was going to show my dad, and I ran, and I spilled the milk, and I was crying," and my dad says, "Don't cry over spilled milk." "Oh, that's great." And then there's Billy, me, says, "My dad was in World War II. And they're like, "Yeah?" "Yeah, and he found himself in a real particular spot. He was in a foxhole, and he was surrounded by the enemy. And he had his gun, a bayonet, and a big old jug of whiskey. So he went down there, took a big old swig of whiskey, got up, shot a couple enemy, went back down, drank some more whiskey, got up, shot a couple more, went down, drank the rest of the whiskey, got up, stabbed the rest of the enemy." They're like, "That's great, Billy. What's the moral of the story?" He says, "The moral of the story is, don't mess with my dad when he's drinking." Because that's exactly what I dealt with my whole life, man. Anticipation, waiting for the violent act to happen. Little Billy sitting there, mom talking, dad drinking, knowing the event is getting ready to happen. Nervous, uncomfortable, powerless. What am I going to do? And then it happens. Mom mouths off. Dad smacks mom. Dad uses a four-letter word that starts with a C. When that happens, we are getting packed up. I don't know. My mom could take a lot of crap, but you call her that, we're loading up in the station wagon. And we would go for a ride. But we always went back. So that was my example of what a man was. You know, I waited, my dad died like 13 years ago. So I waited about 43 years for my dad to ask me to go fishing. He never asked me to go fishing. I didn't know I was an alcoholic. Like I said, you guys all look really well today. You want to know what I looked like when I got here? I weighed 145 pounds. My teeth were rotten because I did a lot of outside issue crap besides just drinking. I love drinking, but I loved all the other shit. That's how you get here when you're 21 years old. People would hand me shit I'd take, and they're like, "Dude, that's like the most I ever seen anybody take. Like, what was it?" An alcoholic is a man that lives on the street. An alcoholic is a man that wears a trench coat and hides his liquor in it. He don't have a job. He lost his family. He's got puke all over him. He can't keep his shit together. Certainly not a 21-year-old kid, man, like me. I'm just partying. I'm just having a good time. How in the hell does partying and having a good time consist of getting kicked out of school, giving up on all your hopes and dreams, mother or kid leaves you, you got nothing. I, too, got sober in Palmdale because when I was living in the valley with the mother of my kid in Tarzana and shit got really bad, where does any self-respectable young man go? back to mommy's house. Pack up the kid, pack up to the mother of my kid, and we end up in Lang or in Palmdale. Like my wife says, nobody moves to Palmdale. You like end up in Palmdale. You run out of gas in Palmdale. You hope the hell to get out of Palmdale. And we went there. I ain't no alcoholic, man. There's no way. Mother, my kid leaves me for the dope man. You would think any self-respectable young guy would say, oh my God, I got to get my shit together, man. I got to get my kid back. Holy, no, 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 not me. Woo, party's on. No responsibility, kid ain't here, old lady ain't, you should do this, you should do that anymore. This is freedom. And man, my life just took a shit. I would drink a 12-pack a day, Miller Genuine Draft, because in 88, that was the shit. There was no IPAs and all this fancy stuff. I've missed out on a lot of good shit in 34 years of sobriety. Zima and hard apple cider, whatever this fancy shit is. I'm drinking a 12-pack of Miller Genuine Draft, man. Painting my room with, like, stripes. Because that was the whole deal back in the 80s. And I'm reading books like The Power of Self-Esteem and Cry Anger. And I'm trying to follow these great methods and tools that are in here. And ain't none of them working. I wonder why this ain't working, man. This shit ain't working. I had turned 21 in October. Shortly thereafter, I'm borrowing mommy's car, because I certainly ain't got a car of my own. She got a big old Cadillac, right? Go to the bar, because now I could drink legally. And of course, I don't know when to stop. It tastes good. I'm just going to keep drinking it. Ran a red light and stopped for a stop sign, so I guess that was a sign to the cop that this guy might be intoxicated. And what happened is I got a drunk driving. Prior to that night, I'd been up for a few days. About 6 months before that drunk driving, I was up for a few days. And arms started looking a little funny, man. Like, man, I think I'm dying. I go wake up mom. I'm like, mom, man, you need to take me to the hospital. I think I'm dying. She says, you know what you need? You need to go to sleep. I'd been up for days, like, rearranging junk drawers, washing everybody's car, you know, taking care of shit. And I remember going to bed, and I slept for over a day. And I got up, and my mom says, you need to leave. Not because I don't want you here, because my mom, man, tough love was out. If it wasn't for my mommy, my mother, I would not be sober. She tolerated all my shit. I always knew I had a place to go. She said, you need to leave, man. You need to go up north and live with your brother. My brother's, his name is Steve. He lives up north and 6 foot five, weighed about 260 pounds, used to ride with the Hell's Angels. He told people what to do and they freaking did it. And if they didn't do it, it was not pretty. And I respected him. You know, like, okay, I'll go. I got there, man. He was doing more outside issue shit than I had ever seen. I was like, man, this is a party. I went into a bar. I ordered a Heineken, a double rum and coke, and a shot of wild turkey. And I proceeded to drink the shot, guzzle the rum and coke, and take a drink off the beer. And the bartender said, you're Steve Matthews' little brother. You need to leave. Because he was violent. And they knew I was related. I lasted about 6 months living there. Was cruising. Me and him got in some argument, and I left. And I'm cruising down the 101 on the highway through a town called Paso Robles. I don't know. I was listening to, like, Ronnie James Dio, Next in Line or some shit. And all I know is I hit the guardrail, man. And I flipped over on my roof and flipped over headlight over taillight, man. It was spinning, and I got out, and I'm like, all these people running towards me. I'm like, I'm all right. And it's just blood. I had scratched my forehead. That's it. That's how fortunate some drunks are, right? A little scratch on the head, I'm okay. Ambulance comes. They take me to the hospital. They're going to check me out. Cops come to the hospital. They say, hey, you've been drinking? I knew exactly what to say. Of course I was not drinking. Nothing. No test, no nothing. I got a ticket for driving without insurance, and that was it. A week, and that is the first time I ever swore off drinking. I'm not drinking anymore. And then that week later, driving mom's caddy. Drunk driving. What the hell am I going to do now? Went to court. They said, hey, you can go to this place called Acton Rehab. Bunch of buddies told me about this place. They got horseback riding, golf courses, swimming pools, women. It's fantastic. I'm like, cool, sign me up. This is going to be bitching. I don't know rehab for what. I'm just going to rehab. So days go by. My buddies throw me a big going away party, man. Of course, it's a kegger. Man, the keg's not gone. The next morning, hey, let's go up to Little Tahunga. We're going to Monkey Canyon. This is going to be great. We proceed to party. I end up in the back of a Chevy truck with a wood floor, not pretty. End up home with splinters in me. The next morning, I got up, May 19th, 1988, took a little hit. Dad drove me to court to turn myself into county jail. Had no idea my life was getting ready to change forever. Well, forever up until today. How's that? They drove me to the courthouse. They took me in the back. I'd been to juvenile hall growing up. This was a little bit different. Obviously, I'm chained to a bunch of other men. I'm 21 years old, 145 pounds. Still, I'm not a small guy, so I didn't feel too uncomfortable. Anyway, old Twin Towers, if you've ever been there, it's a beautiful place. There's a thing called 9500 Block.
Oh, yeah.
What a shithole that is, man. This is like, wow, man. I have definitely reached a level sleep with your shoes on, keep mind your own business, and I just got to wait, man. I got 30 days. 30 days, and then I'm going to this rehab place with the swimming pools and shit. This is all right, I can hang out. Lights never shut off. It's freezing freaking cold. You don't know what's going to happen. Anyway. Call my name one morning, man. I get up. I'm like, cool, I'm leaving. I get in this van with this strange-looking character. I'm like, what is happening here? He cruises around L.A., picking up a bunch of other shady-looking people. I don't mean other because I don't look shady. I've got my shit together. My teeth are rotten. I weigh 145 pounds. But look at these fools, man. They take me up to these hills, man, and Acton. I get out, and all these people come running up to me. Oh, man, welcome, welcome, welcome. They got, like, these keychains down to their knees with all these coins and chips. Man, they're excited, man. Keep coming back. All that shit. I'm like, whoa. Easy. I've, like, landed in some kind of cult. Like, what is going on here? They take me to my little room, man. It's the F dorm. There's, like, four other beds in there. I'm like, this is like camp. I've never been to summer camp before. Well, all right. That day is when my life changed. Went to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm 21 years old. My parents are bar owners. I'd never heard of the word Alcoholics Anonymous. And on top of that, my brother died of alcoholism. My oldest brother, Rob, died in 1983 on Christmas Day alone in a hotel room, 32 years old. Drank himself to death, cirrhosis of the liver. I had never heard the words Alcoholics Anonymous even after that. I go to this meeting. First meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, what are they reading? The doctor's opinion. I'm like, okay, cool. They start describing what an alcoholic is. A person that has an allergy and an obsession. And when he's not drinking, all he's doing is thinking about drinking. And when he starts drinking, he don't know when he's going to stop. I'm like, oh, shit. I'm an alcoholic. That's what it is. I thought it was that guy living on the street, man. Can't keep his shit together. Lost his wife. Lost his job. Not me. I'm just partying, man. I'm a kid. I can stop if I want to. I'll stop if it gets that bad. I'm just a kid, man. This is what everybody does. Everybody does this. Holy shit. I'm an alcoholic? I made a decision right then and there. I'm going to quit drinking. But I ain't going to quit smoking weed. God made weed. I ain't never gotten in any trouble smoking weed. I'm 21 years old and I'd made a decision to quit drinking liquor, man. Liquor was not my problem. Liquor was my solution to my problem. I was uncomfortable, disconnected. It was comfort. And I was deciding to give it up. What the hell am I going to replace that with? I was soon going to find out. The main purpose of the book of Alcoholics Anonymous is to help you find a God of your own understanding that can solve all your problems. Not just your drink problem. All your problems. That's what I found in Alcoholics Anonymous. A God of my own understanding. And a beautiful wife. The more I can say that, the better it's going to be later. My beautiful wife. My lovely wife. So I made a decision. And then I went to a few more meetings and I made a decision. Hey, it's not all the same because trust me, drugs is different than alcohol. I get it. But I made a decision. Hey, man, I got to give this a shot. So before you know it, they're calling me Mr. AA. Man, I'm carrying the big book around. They're like, oh, look at him. You know, the way I looked at it, I was like at the University of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't have to go to work. I don't have to do shit. I just got to read this book and go to these meetings. Oh, and clean the kitchen. Because I had 400 hours of community service. That's a lot of community service, man. I cleaned a lot of dishes and chairs and tables while I was in there. It was actually a really great time, man. If you've ever been to Acton Rehab in the late, it's not open anymore, sadly. But, and it changed. Because when I went there was no fences. The women were separated from the men. I mean, they had their own dorms, but we all gathered. It was actually a great time, man. It was the summer. I mean, I got sober in May. By the time I got there, it was June. It's hot. You're in Acton. I had a good time, man. And I learned what I was suffering from. You know, the big book from the beginning of the first page to page 60 describes what an alcoholic is. Now, I just want to make a point real quick is that I've watched people come in and try to, hey, man, you did steps one and two before you even walked through the door, man. Let's just get to step three. It's like, whoa, how can you apply a solution to something you don't? You got to know what the problem is. What is the problem? Do you suffer from the problem? Maybe alcoholism is not your problem. Trust me, I tried to get a lot of addicts into Alcoholics Anonymous because, man, this shit works. AA is like the mother. This is it. However, if you don't have recognition and you don't understand or you don't feel a part of, man, you're not going to stay. Anyway, I had a great time in Acton Rehab, man, and really got a great foundation. Chuck and Kelly came in. They were H&I, man. H&I, hospitals and institutions. I asked Chuck to be my sponsor, man. What am I going to do when I get out of here? I'm going to go to a meeting. And when I get out, I went to a meeting. Went to the Palmdale group. Back on Palmdale Boulevard behind Claudia's bar. It's moved since then, but. Bunch of old people, man. They were like in their 30s. This is freaking, man, this is going to suck. You know what they did? They welcomed me. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. Welcome. Keep coming back. And they say things like, you know, live and let live and all those other lame things that I thought were lame back in the day. Keep it simple, stupid. Like, whoa, this is great, you know. Hey, just don't drink no matter what. You know, telling an alcoholic just don't drink is like telling a homeless guy just get a house. It's like, whoa, if I could just not drink, I wouldn't be here. You know, what do I got to do here? And what I did was started working the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. The most powerful step I have ever worked and continue to work is step three. When I did step three with another man, and we got on our knees and we said the third step prayer, something absolutely dramatic happened to me. And what it was the obsession to drink and get loaded was removed like that. I can tell you in 34 years of sobriety, I've never driven to the liquor store and said, I'm blessed. And I'm also blessed to say I've been sober since my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. It doesn't mean you can't stay sober if you go out and come back. I get it. I'm blessed, man. I got caught up with a group of people that we don't get loaded. We freaking stick together. When you go to meetings, please, if you're new, please don't sit in the back where the loafers and the slippers sit. If you sit in the back every time you come to a meeting, I don't know you're here. That means I don't know if you're not here. You want us to know that you're here. Because when we recognize, yo, where's Joe? Where's Mary? Where's Sally? Shit, has anybody saw Gail? Call it. This is it, man. This is tribe. This is so much more than not drinking. I went to a funeral a couple weeks ago in Lake Havasu. A sponsor of mine lost his son. He didn't lose his son. His son passed away. Accident, like a motorcycle, a dirt bike motorcycle accident. 2 days before New Year's. Tragic, tragic. I went to the funeral. You know who showed up at the funeral? Freaking Alcoholics Anonymous showed up at the funeral. The people that you know, the level of friendships that I have found in Alcoholics Anonymous is amazing. My buddies from the bar don't show up. My buddies from junior high and high school, I don't even know where they're at. You know who shows up when shit gets tough? People in Alcoholics Anonymous, man. I never, ever thought I'd have the life I have today. Ever. But by discovering, uncovering, and discarding the stories. You know how many stories I had that were made up about myself, man? All this bullshit, you're not good enough. You don't, that little voice in my head. I had to rewrite those stories, man. And how do you do that? Through the four step. I waited all those years for my dad to ask me to go fishing. You know what I could have done? I could have asked him, hey, let's go fishing. Why am I saying? I was the victim. Until I did the four step. I'm the victim. If they would have just treated me right, school, everybody in my life just treated me shitty. I was great. I was a great kid. If they would have just treated me better, man, my life would be better. It's a funny thing about the four step, especially with a new guy. If I tell a guy, hey, man, you do this four step, I'm going to give you like the biggest bag of dope you ever saw. That shit's done like one night. Like, wow, it's over. But if you tell a newcomer, man, you do this work, you're going to find out who you really are and what part you played in all this madness and finally take responsibility for your part. And as a result, you're going to be given a life beyond your wildest dreams. They're like, shit, I got to write all that down? You want to know everything? You want to know my deepest, darkest secrets? Yeah, I do. And sometimes it even says you might need to write down your whole life story. I don't care what you write. I mean, I do, trust me. There's the whole thing. But sometimes there's more to the story. We all have stories in our head. You know what? There's no beginning and there's no ending. It's called resentment. It just goes round and round. The longer I let it go round and round, the worse it gets, the worse they were. What's crazy about that? Get that shit on paper. It's like, wow. Now there's a beginning to that story, and there's an ending to the story. I wrote it. And when I get it out of my head and on paper, instead of it being right here in my face, this nightmare, it's like, whoa. I can breathe, man. I can breathe. Those stories make us hold our breath. We don't talk right. We don't stand right. We don't feel right. When you can write those stories down and take a different, honest look at them, all of a sudden I can stand up different. Yeah, that happened to me. Yeah, he did that to me. Yeah, I didn't deserve that. But I'm alive. I have hope. I have a solution. There's not just three columns. He did that to me. That's, you know, what he did. I'm mad at Dad. These are all the things Dad did to me, and this is how it affected me. Oh, that's great. What part did you play? I've had many of people, and I'm sure you guys have had, here's my four step. I'm like, it's great. You're pissed off at a lot of people. Where's your part? What do you mean? The book clearly says, putting out of our minds the things that others have done to us, we resolutely take a different look at this, putting aside all that. What part, if any, because we don't always play a part, but what part, if any, did we set the ball in motion? What part did we play? And when I took an honest look at that, holy crap, man. I was not such a great guy. I wasn't just standing there minding my own business. I owe some people an amends. You could come into Alcoholics Anonymous and just don't drink. And all you're going to get is a person that just don't drink. And he's miserable. She's miserable. I've seen them. I've seen people with 20-something years just not drink, no matter what. They're still robbing, cheating, stealing, lying. They're just not living the life, man. But when you honestly do the work outlined in the first 164 pages, I can guarantee you one thing. Alcoholics Anonymous works 100% of the time. Not some of the time, 100% of the time, if you do what's outlined in the first 164 pages. People will do 1, 2, 3, skip 4, maybe do part of 5, not talk about 6 months and go, Alcoholics Anonymous don't work. This shit don't work. It's like, don't blame Alcoholics Anonymous for your lack of freaking, you know, integrity. Do the work. I've never seen it fail. It doesn't mean that you're not going to come in here and have some tough days. Man, I have some tough days. Tough days. You want to hear about a tough day? Tough day is when my daughter calls me and says, hey, we're being rushed to the hospital. The baby stopped breathing. Go to the hospital and find out my 7-month-old granddaughter passed away. That's a tough day. Alcoholics Anonymous taught me how to be there when the tough day happens. What do you say to your daughter that lost her, you know, that lost her daughter? You know what you say? I love you, and I'm here, and we are going to get through this. I've had a lot of tough days in Alcoholics Anonymous. Gail talked about tough days. We tried to have a kid. 5 miscarriages. Don't know why. Unexplainable. Can't figure it out. Doctors, they want to give you suppositories, pills, everything. None of it's working. I tell my wife, I understand. You know what she tells me? No, you don't. What do you mean, no, I don't? She goes, you know what it's like to look in another kid's eyes and understand that that's your child. Because I have a daughter. She's 38 years old, and I had her when I was young. I know what it's like to she didn't. But then we got pregnant again. And for some reason, the doctors decide, hey, you know what? We're just going to treat this like a normal pregnancy. She carried the baby full term, man. We had little William. Yeah. July 13th, 1997. He's 25 years old now. He came up to me when he was 5 years old. He goes, Dad, I'm a miracle. I'm a gift from God, right? And I'm like, yeah, you sure are. Says, and Dad, God gave me to you, huh? And I said, yeah, I'm sure glad he did. He says, Dad, before God gave me to you, I was waiting a long time. Nobody in here can tell me that there's not some great power that be, man. I hear it. We all have it. The book tells me we're born with it. I know what's right and what's wrong inherently. And when I go with what's right, good shit happens. Guess what happens on the other side? I'll tell you a story. I'm driving down the road. I worked for a construction company back in the day. They say, hey, Bill, man, a bracket fell off the truck. On the 5 freeway, Castaic Lake, hey, can you get it? I mean, we're talking a big piece of metal. I'm like, okay. So I see it. It's like in the number 2 lane. I see it. I pull over. I'm like waiting for my time to run out on the freeway to grab it. I've played on the freeway before, literally when I was younger. We used to get loaded and try to run across the 5 freeway. But I waited. People were going around it. I'm ready to go, and here comes this old guy. I'm like, he ain't going around it. He's going to, like, try to go over it. He goes over it. Boom, boom. I mean, the car, it literally tore up the bottom of his car. I'm like, oh, shit. I'm like, I'm 3 years sober. I'm beelining it back to the truck. Like, oh, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? He pulls over right in front of me. And he gets out of his car and he's shaking. He's like, what was that? And you know, there comes a time in a person's life where you just know exactly what the right thing to do. And I told him, I have no idea what that was. It looked dangerous. I thought I'd be a good Samaritan and get it out of the road. Have a great day. And I went back to my truck, and I got in the truck, and I pulled away. I felt like, shit. I felt horrible. Told my buddies at work. They're all laughing. Ah. Week later, driving home, working night shift. Man, I'm tired. Driving my little Toyota pickup truck. I'm on the 14, Placerita Canyon. I look up. Holy shit. Biggest piece of lumber I ever seen in the road. Bam! I hit it. It flattens my tire. Pulls out like the slave cylinder out of my transmit. I looked up and said, I get it, man. I get it. We will be faced with decisions every day. What do we do? What do we do? One thing I can say that Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me is it's commitment. It's consistency. We do what we say we're going to do. I watched my mom take her last breath. My mother was 72 years old. Before she took her last breath, I said, Mom, I'm going to run your age in miles. She said, I knew you were going to do something crazy. I'm a long-distance runner, but I ain't never ran 72 miles. I said, Mom, I'm going to run your age. So what do? Put a plan together. Huh, how do you run 72 miles? So I found a race. San Diego 100-mile foot race, 2018. I'm going to run a 100-mile foot race. What do? You get a plan together, you get some buddies together, and you set out and you do the work. That's what Alcoholics Anonymous taught me. Day came, start the race. It's like a Friday morning at 5 o'clock. It's beautiful. Man, by mile 40, I'm freaking tired, man. I don't even know if I want to do this. But no, you keep your commitments, man. You do what you say you're going to do. Man, all right. This is all in my head, by the way. I'm not talking to anybody else. I keep pushing, man. I keep pushing. By mile 50, I get a buddy on the road with me, man. And he can run with you. They have pacers at these long-distance races. And I'm like, man, I don't know if I'm going to make it, man. He goes, no, Bill, man, you trained, man. You did it. We're doing this, man. We're doing it. I kept going, man. I kept pushing. I see people quitting. I see in people, oh, my knee, oh, my ankle. I'm like, yeah, my knee and ankle hurting too, man. I think I'm done. No, man, we're doing this. Mile 60, mile 65. I'm fucking doing it, man. I'm doing it. It's getting dark. No, it's dark, man. It's dark. We're in the mountains, man. And by the way, when I say San Diego, I thought it was going to be a cool ocean, like, trail race. No, it's in Julian, which is like 60 miles inland, like the hottest place you could imagine. It's hot, San Diego. Anyway, 60 to 65 miles, man. I'm like, I don't know if I can keep doing it. And I keep pushing. And I freaking get to mile 72, and I stopped. I looked up to said, Mom, I did it, man. I did it. We keep our commitments in Alcoholics Anonymous. We do what we say we're going to do. I grew up here. I grew up, man. This place taught me how to be a man. Not a man that beats his wife. A man that speaks his mind. Not afraid to cry. Not afraid to show his emotion. I am all of that, man. I'm masculine. I'm feminine. I'm right here, man. I'm a whole freaking person. And those weird stories I told myself about you have to be this and you don't let people disrespect, all that shit I had to rewrite in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know what a spell is? A spell is a collection of words with great influence. We are telling them to ourselves and we're telling them to others. Be careful. Watch what you say. You become what you think about. What is mindset? Mindset is a story I tell myself about myself. So what do I tell myself about myself? Now, today, I learned I'm capable. I'm equal to. I measure up. I'm good enough, man. I'm good enough to do the job God created me to do. Not the job Joe's doing. My job is different than Joe. I'm supposed to be honest, open-minded, and willing, right? Trust God, clean house, work with others, do the deal, man. You know what the buddies of mine, I got buddies, we've been sober together for 34 years, man. Best man at weddings, mom and dad's funeral. My wife and I, we've watched my mother and my father both take their last breath. It's the most painful and serene and spiritual thing that I've ever seen. This is the clock that was hanging in my mom's room right here. My mother passed away at 7 o'clock. We watched her take her last breath. We all, what's the first thing that happened when we came into this world? We took our first breath. The day is going to come where we go. What's important? What the hell do you do in between that? What are people going to say about me when I'm gone? Did he care about people? Did he care about himself? Did he have a lot of money? Or whatever, man. We get to choose. I get to choose that, man. I am no longer the victim of the stories and what people told me I could or cannot do. The book tells me I'm capable of doing anything. Not anything, but everything I want to do. As long as I ain't harming no one else, man. Because I have discovered and uncovered and discarded those things, man, have cut me off from the sunlight of the Spirit. Guy come telling me, man, about filing for unemployment, but he's working on the side, but his wife is treating him poorly. I'm like, maybe you should stop working on the side when you're collecting unemployment. What does that have to do with anything? You're freaking living dirty, dude. The coin, that coin, that lovely coin, to thy own self be true. I can lie to you, but I can't lie to myself. God knows the nature of my deeds. You know who I am? Who you are is what you do when nobody else is watching. And when I lay down at night, I ask, God, may people treat me tomorrow the way I treated them today. Can you imagine? That's a way different perspective, right? makes me really pay attention to what I'm saying, how I'm treating others. That four step, like I said, man, there's a lot of shit that happened to me. I didn't deserve that. Things happened to me that I didn't play a part. That's where forgiveness comes in, man. Though we don't like their symptoms, they're God's children too. God, save me from being angry. How can I be helpful? I hate when people throw that line at me and I use it on other people. You know how I know I got rid of a resentment? It's because when I see you, I don't want to punch you in the face. If you have a resentment or you think you got over it, but yet you see Joe and you still want to hit him, man, there's a little bit of work to do. And like I said, if you came in here today, can you imagine? Like I said, I'm a recovered alcoholic. Can you imagine going to the hospital? You broke your arm. You said you're going to be recovering from that arm for 34 years. If you're in here and you've been around here for a while and you're still suffering from alcoholism, there's only one person to blame, and it ain't your sponsor. If you're in here and you're miserable today, there is nobody to blame but yourself, man. And I got to wake up every day and take an honest look at myself as well. Trust me, I fall short. Ask my wife. But I know to make amends and admit my faults. You know who called us in the middle of the night? My son called us last night, like 11:30 at night, having problems with his relationship. I never called my mom and dad when I was having a problem with my relationship. I didn't call them, first of all, unless I needed some money. Because the car broke down. Need a starter again. Yeah, it just keeps going out, Mom. All the games we run on our parents. But he called for direction. Showed emotion. Mom, I don't know what to do. I heard her say, have you put your hand over your heart and just said it's going to be okay? Take a breath. The key to the darkness is breath, man. Breath. Anxiety, fear, depression. Stop. Take a deep breath. You're going to get faced with it. If you're ever faced with a tough phone call situation that's bothering you, I'll give you a method that works all the time. Stop and take 6 deep breaths. Not 5, not 7. 7 will work too, but not less than 6. Just go. I guarantee you, you're going to walk in with a different outlook than you had. And if you can pause before you retaliate to that person that just attacked you, you know where God's at? God is in that pause. When I breathe, all of a sudden, I'm not reacting. I'm responding. The book says, pause when agitated. God is in the pause, man. Man, if you're searching for the solution, you're searching for recovery, you were searching for some miracle, you found it. Alcoholics Anonymous. I thought it was lame too when I got here. Like, holy shit, man. How is this self-help group? This is so much more than anything I ever imagined in my life. When I go to bed tonight with a smile on my face, I'm going to wake up with one. When I was getting loaded, that's what I chased. I just want to feel good. I want to feel good. How come it always goes away? It goes away. I got to chase it. I'm chasing. This is real, man. People. Wish. We all know them people that aren't drunk. They don't have problems, but they sure are depressed. And I wish they would find tribe, community. There was an old test back in the day. They put a rat in a cage, cocaine and food, and a rat. That rat tapped that cocaine all day long. Bah, 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 bah. Died. Take the same cage, same cocaine, same food, put more rats in it, put some toys in there, some things to play. Nobody touched the cocaine. Try it, man. I can't stay. Alone, I was in a bedroom at my mom's house reading books, drinking 12-packs, man. Dying, tapping. Why ain't it working? You know, now I got you, man. My wife says we all have the same last name here. Alcoholic. However, for some reason, this convention decided to say, put my whole last name on some flyer or something. Oh, by the way, dude, thank you for inviting. Man, I forgot to rock. Man, I've known this guy as a kid. This is a good dude right here, man. This, I don't care what anybody says. This is a good dude. I've watched him. Doesn't mean he doesn't have his shortcomings and fall short. This is a good dude. We're good freaking people, man. Alcoholics are good people. And we can recover, man. We could get well. The book tells me. There's a great promise in the book. You know what? It's the title of a chapter. There is a solution. You are going to know a new freedom, a new happiness, how to handle things that used to baffle you. All that stuff, man. It's true. It's not woo-woo, man. It's real stuff. Change your thinking. Change your life, man. Because what if the good shit happens? I appreciate that. Thanks, man.